Chapter 6, The Dispatcher.
After they dropped off the load of car parts at the GM plant, Johnny invited Mark home for supper.
Are you sure your wife would appreciate you bringing a trucker home unannounced? Seeing how happy she was to get the check, you two might have some celebrating to do tonight on your own, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean, Mark. But none of it would have happened without your help, so I owe you. Dinner and putting you up for a night is the least I can do.
You sure?
Don't worry, we'll still be celebrating, only you'll be in the basement and we'll be on the second floor.
All right, I could do with a home-cooked meal.
On the way, they stopped to check on Mark's rig. It was parked in a safe enough spot in the lot of a gas station owned by a friend of Mark's. But the place closed for a few hours each night, and that was more than enough time for someone to do damage to the rig. It was usually kids breaking in and stealing anything they could get their hands on quick. If they couldn't find anything to steal, they sometimes broke things in frustration or emptied out a fire extinguisher inside the cab just for the hell of it. The rig was fine, just as Mark had left it. He took a clean change of clothes, locked everything up again, and rejoined Johnny in his rig. When they arrived, Mrs. Jones wasn't too happy to see Mark following her husband into the house. But once Johnny explained Mark's role in the hijacking of his latest load and basically holding it for ransom, Rachel, her name turned out to be, couldn't do enough for Mark. Pork chops and potatoes turned into a 5-course meal. And after supper, Rachel offered Mark yet another beer and cigar, which she didn't even send him outside to smoke.
King for a day.
What do you mean?
She's really giving you the royal treatment.
You mean she's not like this every day of the week?
What's so funny?
We're just happy about the way things went today, that's all.
Well, I'm pleased too. In fact, I was thinking that maybe you and Johnny should become partners. God knows he could use someone with experience looking out for him.
Well, it just worked out I had time to help Johnny out. Usually I'm driving my own loads, and that's the way I like it, you know, on my own.
The room was suddenly silent, and Mark feared that Rachel didn't like what he'd said.
I thought you'd say something like that. But can you at least check in on him once in a while and, you know, give him some advice when he needs it?
Mark looked over at Johnny and noticed the man looked pained. Obviously, Johnny had made a few costly mistakes that could have been easily avoided, just like every new driver starting out.
I'd be happy to, Rachel.
Thank you.
My wife.
She loves you is all.
Around 8 o'clock, Mark realized he didn't have a clue what he was doing in the morning, and he decided to give his dispatcher, Bud, a call.
Okay, I use your phone.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
What, you're not even saying yellow?
Who's this?
Mark Dalton.
What do you want?
Let's see. How about a load, like every other time I call you?
I haven't got one for you.
But it's been a couple of days since I called you last. You must have got something by now.
Oh, sure, I got loads.
Well, then?
Well, one's going to Halifax tomorrow morning.
I'll take it.
Well, you can have it. But I don't have anything in Halifax for the rest of this week, so you'll be deadheading it back. Which shouldn't be so bad, considering the price of fuel out of the East Coast right now.
But there's got to be something in Halifax. I've taken plenty of loads out there before. It's a port city, for crying out loud.
I got a couple of companies out there, but none of them have a load for me at the moment.
When will they?
Mark knew he was pushing Bud a little, but the man had had 3 days to work something out. He should have come up with something by now.
Well, I don't know, Dalton. Maybe I should spend my entire day cold calling shippers long distance and asking them if they want to try somebody new.
You mean you don't already do that?
Listen, Dalton. You're just worried about your next load, but I gotta worry about your next three, or you'll be complaining to me about how you can't make any money, or too many miles, or not enough miles, fuel prices, or I haven't made love to my wife in weeks. It never ends with you drivers, does it?
Come on, Bud. It doesn't seem to me like it's all that tough of a job. You get a load, you send the driver. How hard can it be?
As you probably noticed, I'm a little stressed out at the moment. You know, I could use a couple of days off. If you think dispatching is such a walk in the park, why don't you take over for me for the next, say, 2 days?
Are you serious?
This was very unlike Bud, but he did sound like he desperately needed some time off.
Of course I'm serious, Dalton. 200 a day serious enough for you?
Mark was impressed. $200 a day was pretty good pay for dispatching, especially when there wouldn't be any miles going on motherload while he was doing it. And it didn't sound like there was all that many loads to be keeping track of these days.
2 days and then you'll be back.
That's right.
It was a good deal, especially since Mark could use that time to set himself up with a sweet series of loads that would take him to all his favorite cities, maybe even somewhere hot by the ocean.
Sure. Why not? I'll do it.
Okay. You'll need to be here by 6 tomorrow morning. I'll let you in and take an hour or so to explain a few things, and I'll be gone.
Can I call you if I have any problems while you're away?
No. Besides, what kind of problems are you gonna have?
I guess so.
Yeah. See you in the morning, then.
What was that all about?
That was Bud, my dispatcher. I'll be taking over for him for the next 2 days.
As dispatcher? Good luck, man.
Why do you say that? I mean, how hard can it be?
Johnny gave Mark a ride to Motherlode early the next morning, and Mark was able to pull up in front of Bud's office just after 6. Bud rented out the office portion of an industrial unit in the northwest end of Toronto. It was a decent location, near to the rail lines and plenty of other businesses that regularly needed trucks to haul loads across North America. Bud was waiting for him inside.
I said 6, Dalton.
Traffic.
Come on in.
What? No inside lock?
A lot of dispatchers worked in locked rooms that limited drivers' access to them. It didn't happen often, but angry drivers were known to sometimes barge into an office looking for the dispatcher who'd sent him on a goose chase that caused the driver to eat a couple of 100 kilometers worth of fuel.
And they're installing them next week.
You need locks on the doors?
Hey, let's just say it would be nice to have them if I ever need them.
I guess so.
Now, there's a fridge and a coffee machine in the lunchroom, and I got a cot set up in the back just in case you want to save on a hotel.
A cot? Huh. Sounds great.
In the office, there are 2 phone lines and another for the fax machine, and then there's a cell number. Now, I look after 20 drivers, but in the next 2 days, only about 10 should be calling in for new loads. I expect about 15 new loads to be called in by my regular customers, and then there's always 1 or 2 wild card shippers who call every few months.
Mark's head was already beginning to spin with so many numbers coming at him so quickly. He decided his best course of action would be to try and handle just one thing at a time.
Since I'm only going to be gone for 2 days, I won't expect you to do much paperwork. A job's going to be tough enough as it is.
I'll be able to handle it, no problem.
Bud just smiled at him. It was a devilish sort of grin that seemed out of character with all that he knew about the man. It was as if Bud were enjoying this, or like he knew something that Mark didn't.
Oh, good. I just put all the paperwork in a folder for me, and I'll sort it out for the bookkeeper when I get back.
All right. Seems simple enough.
Hey, you think so?
What? You don't think I can handle it?
Oh, you're a sharp guy, Dalton, and I'm happy to have you driving for me. I mean, a lot of guys wouldn't have been able to deliver the load you have, but you have to be more than smart to be a dispatcher. You gotta be one part psychologist because you gotta have a good feel for all the drivers' different personalities. And you gotta be one part chess player because you gotta be 3 moves ahead of every driver you got on the road. And you gotta be one part mother because with 20 drivers wanting loads, you gotta look after every one of them equally.
Mark was impressed. He'd never heard a dispatcher talk about his job in such a way before. To hear Bud talk like this was, well, amazing. Still, Mark's character wouldn't let him go soft on the guy just for spouting a few pearls of wisdom.
Well, I'll vouch for the last one, Bud. You're one hell of a mother.
See you in 2 days, smartass.
Yeah, see you, Bud.
Bud wasn't gone 3 minutes before the phones began ringing.
Hello?
Where's Bud?
He's off for a couple of days.
Who are you?
Mark Dalton.
But someone else took it before I got there.
Mark wondered what the driver wanted him to do about it.
And what are you going to do about it?
Me?
Yeah, you. You're dispatching, ain't you? I was sent to Peterborough for a load that somebody else obviously picked up before me. Now I want another load, and it better be a good one.
All right, okay, let's see. There's a load in Lindsay ready at 1.
He gave the driver the address.
Call me when you get there. Hello?
Bud.
Vacation, I'm filling in.
Okay, last night Bud gave me a load to pick up in Manitoba. He told me Snowflake, but I think he meant Snow Lake. And I want to know which one it is before I head out.
Huh, you're right. Snow Lake.
Good thing I checked then. Those 2 towns are 450 kilometers apart. Thanks, buddy.
Maybe that could be my dispatching name. Buddy. Just like Bud, only 150 pounds lighter. Hello?
Where's Bud?
What do you want?
I picked up a sealed load in Victoria and just delivered it into Calgary. Bill of Lading says there should be 10 skids in the trailer, but there's only 8 here. What the hell's going on?
I don't know. Let me check into it.
I'll be waiting for your call.
Mark looked at the clock on the wall. It wasn't even 10 yet.
Hello?
Well, I'm in Lindsay now, and there's no freaking load. Shipper said a driver picked it up not 10 minutes before I got to the dock.
What?
Don't give me that. You know exactly what I said. What the hell's going on here?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Mark wanted to make an excuse like it was his first day on the job, but he knew Bud would hear about it eventually.
Let me call you back in a minute.
Mark began shuffling through all his paperwork and immediately found that the load in Calgary was supposed to be only 8 skids, but somehow an older bill of lading made its way to the driver. That was easy enough to solve. He made the call and explained the situation. Now for the driver in Lindsay. It sounded like the guy was picking up double-blind loads in which the shipper didn't know who was picking up the load and the driver didn't know who the consignee was. But that didn't explain why the loads weren't there.
Unless
Mark was reading a copy of some other driver's papers. If that was the case, then of course there were no loads, because the other drivers were picking those loads up before the driver he sent arrived on the scene. This was easily solved, but Mark dreaded telling the driver. For the first time in the day, Mark thought that maybe dispatching was a little tougher than he gave Bud credit for.
Hey, listen, pal, seems we had a bit of a problem on our end.
He went on to explain the situation, then listened patiently while the guy let him have it.
Yeah, sorry.
When the driver calmed down enough to listen, Mark gave him a sweetheart load out of Toronto, going into Florida with a day layover, before taking a load of oranges back into the city. He'd probably be taking his wife or girlfriend with him on the run. He'd been saving that run for himself, but it was just the thing he needed to smooth things over. Mark hung up the phone and was feeling pretty good about how things were going. Sure, he'd made a few mistakes, but the trucks were still rolling and no one wanted to kill him yet. After lunch, he glanced through the paperwork on all the loads he'd assigned before putting them in a folder for Bud. He was about to close the folder when a word on one of the sheets jumped out at him. It was a pickup in Snowflake, Manitoba. Snowflake, not Snow Lake. Mark started feeling warm and wet under his clothes as he searched for the driver's number so he could give him a call and turn him around before he got too far. But of course, he couldn't find the sheet or any book listing driver's numbers. If he didn't find it soon, it meant he'd be getting a call when the driver reached Snowflake and realized the address he was looking for didn't exist. Mark put his head in his hands and hoped that Snowflake was on the way to Snow Lake.
No, it's not on the way. It's 450 effing clicks in the opposite direction.
Sorry about that.
Sorry? You're effing sorry?
Yeah, I am. It's an honest mistake. Anybody could have made it.
Yeah, but I asked you to check it out before I headed out.
I know. I just made a mistake.
Your mistake. So I'm not gonna lose money because of it, right?
That's right. I'll make it up to you.
And how are you going to do that?
That was a good question. Mark didn't exactly know what he had the authority to do. He could pay the driver for his miles, but that money would probably come out of Bud's pocket. Mark could also pay the driver himself, but that meant admitting to Bud that he'd screwed up and couldn't do the job right, even for just a few days. Mark didn't like it, but the last option seemed like the right thing to do. After all, if he'd been the driver, he'd expect some sort of compensation.
I'll pay for the empty mileage myself.
For the round trip, all 900 miles?
Sure, for the whole 900 miles.
Well, all right then.
If only he could get Bud to do that. But of course, first Bud would have to make a mistake. Mark tried to think back over the years, but he couldn't come up with any instance where Bud had screwed up as badly as he had in just his first day on the job. All right, conceded Mark, maybe Bud is a pretty good dispatcher.
I'll call Snowflake and let them know you're coming.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Later that afternoon, a driver called from south of the border.
Where's Bud?
He's in the can.
Pennsylvania, and I wanted to check where I'm going. Bud told me Harrisburg, at least that's what I wrote down, but there's so many towns around here that sound like that, I want to make sure I know where I'm going. I've already passed Harriston, Harris Point, Harrison, Harrisville, and Harrisonburg.
No kidding.
He'd heard there were areas of the United States that were settled by a single large family, or the descendants of the first settlers, and all the towns ended up having similar names. But he never knew they could get that confusing.
Yeah, no kidding. Can you help me out?
Listen, stay on the line.
He found the driver's paperwork and checked the pickup location 3 times before getting back on the phone.
You still there?
Yep.
Okay, it is Harrisburg. H-A-R-R-I-S-B-U-R-G. You got it?
I got it.
Good.
Sorry to bother you about it, but it's always good to double-check these things.
Bud had, of course, given the driver the correct destination, but it never hurt to make sure.
You got that right.
Talk at you later.
Feeling a little better about the way things were going, but not much, he'd learned a good lesson. But the trouble was, he'd learned it a couple of hours too late. Mark wondered how much else he didn't know about this job.
Hey, where's Bud?
He's off today. What's up?
I broke down west of Calgary.
Is it serious?
Yeah, the drive shaft's busted.
So you're gonna be there for a while.
That's right, and this load isn't gonna make it to Vancouver on time.
I'll try and send someone for the load.
I'd appreciate that.
Yeah?
Where's old Bud?
Gone fishing. I'm taking care of things in the meantime.
Well, this is Gord from Lachine Fabricators in Montreal. I've got 8 trailer loads I need taken into Toronto by Friday. 3 will be ready on Wednesday, 3 on Thursday, and 2 on Friday morning.
8 loads, huh?
Yeah, 8 loads. What time can I expect the drivers on Wednesday?
It's kind of short notice, isn't it?
Bud never had a problem doing it this way.
What do you want?
Hello, is that you, Bud?
No, Bud went out for coffee.
When will he be back?
Day after tomorrow.
I got my check for the last 3 loads, and the amount is wrong.
By how much?
$6.
What?
Yeah, it's out $6. See, generally when my checks come in, the first
The
thing
guy
I do
rambled
is
on, explaining how the check didn't match what he figured he was owed. Mark just shook his head. Depending on where the guy was on the North American continent, it might have cost him $6 just to make the phone call to complain.
I'll tell Bud you called. We'll get that $6 to you just as soon as we can, okay, pal?
Great, thanks.
Where could I expect the drivers here?
I'll get back to you.
The police want to know if somebody's going to come by for the trailer now, or should they get someone locally to take it off the highway?
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Mark didn't have an answer for either of them, because he didn't know. He didn't know anything about being a dispatcher. And now he was looking like a fool for being so cocky with Bud. He was more than ready to admit that now, and he'd take it easier on Bud the next time the man didn't have a load quite ready, or when he forgot where he'd sent him, or if the paperwork was just a little irregular.
What the hell?
The front door of the office suddenly burst open and a huge, grease-stained trucker stormed inside holding a tire iron in his big, beefy fist.
I want to talk to you!
Who are you?
Don't give me that! You know damn well who I am!
Mark studied the man's face for a few seconds. His hair was long, pulled straight back and tied in a ponytail. He had a couple of days' worth of stubble, but it was neatly trimmed and looked like the beginning of a decent beard. His eyes were big and mean, like they were on fire. And there was a wild sneer on his lips, like he was in no mood to talk. Mark had never seen the man before in his life.
Sorry, but I don't know who you are. I've never seen you before.
You sure about that, are
you? I just met you and I already know I'll never forget you as long as I live.
You sure you didn't see a picture of me somewhere? Like in my house? While you were sleeping with my wife?
What?
Mark always wondered if his years as a private investigator sticking his nose into other people's dirty business would ever catch up with him. Perhaps now it had.
You've been doing my wife!
Mark tried to recall his sexual activity over the past few months. He'd made it a habit of avoiding women who wore wedding bands or engagement rings and tried to stay away from women with boyfriends. And he most definitely didn't patronize lot lizards. But even if he'd unknowingly been involved with a married woman, it sure wasn't anything recent. He hadn't even been with a woman in almost 2 months. He had been close a couple of times, like a few weeks back in a hotel outside of Calgary, but she ended up drugging his wine so an accomplice of hers could rip off his load. Not exactly an intimate relationship.
Look, pal, I don't know who you are, but I can assure you I did not sleep with your wife.
He looked unconvinced and probably thought Mark was trying to wiggle his way out of a jam.
Your name's Bud, right?
No, my name's Mark Dalton.
Well, then where's Bud?
He's out of the office for a little while.
When's he coming back?
Mark wondered if he should tell the guy that if he really wanted to meet Bud, all he'd have to do is hang around for another day. It would serve Bud right. After all, what were the chances of a near-homicidal maniac calling on Mark on one of the 2 days Bud strangely offered to switch places with him? Obviously, Bud had known this guy was coming and traded places with Mark to avoid getting his head beat in. Still, Mark didn't know the whole story here, and he wasn't about to put Bud in jeopardy. This guy looked like he wanted Bud's head, and putting Bud in the hospital would only mean Mark would have to work as a dispatcher for even longer. No way he was going to let that happen.
He's driving a load into Alaska and won't be back till the end of the month.
Damn it! I'm only in town a few days. I've got to pick up a load headed for the East Coast in the morning.
Mark could see the obvious frustration on the man's face. He'd probably been driving for days, thinking about nothing but what he was going to do to Bud when he got here. And now that Bud wasn't around, the guy was lost over what to do next. That, and he probably felt a little foolish right about now. But Mark knew exactly what he was going through, since it hadn't been that long ago that Mark had found out that his wife had been cheating on him. So the two men were actually kindred spirits, and maybe this guy just needed someone to talk to for a while. Someone who understood.
You know, when I found out my wife was cheating on me, I wasn't mad at the person she'd been sleeping with. I figured if it wasn't that person, then it would be someone else. You know, if a woman's the kind to go looking for another lover, she can find one around just about any corner.
Or under every rock.
Plenty of them to be had there, my friend. Listen, I've got a break coming up. You want to grab a coffee?
That'd be nice.
Come on, there's a great shop around the corner. We can talk on the way.
My name's Chuck.
After sending his new friend on his way a whole lot calmer than when he first came in, Mark settled down to put out all the fires that had erupted earlier in the morning. He was up well past midnight, but by the time he lay down on the cot in the back room, everyone had been taken care of and no one would be out gunning for his head. As he lay in bed thinking about the day's events, the thing he kept coming back to was how Bud, a man whose gut had its own postal code, had been able to steal away anyone's woman. The man was loud-mouthed, short-tempered, and without a sense of humor. Or maybe that was just the way he chose to work as a dispatcher. That would make sense, since those qualities would certainly help make him a better dispatcher, but wouldn't translate well in the romance department. Maybe there was a side to Bud that Mark didn't know about. There was certainly enough of Bud to hide such things from view. The little joke put a smile on Mark's face as he drifted off to sleep, imagining what other things Bud might be hiding inside that belt buckle vault of his. Awakened by the rapping on the front door, his first thought was that his new friend had come back wanting to know where Bud lived. But as the noise persisted, Mark took a look and saw it was actually Bud, eager to get back to work. Mark was unlocking the door a split second later.
Hey, you're back.
Yeah! How bad you screw things up?
Not too bad. I got everything straightened out in the end.
Uh-huh. What's it gonna cost me?
A few hundred miles in fuel.
All right.
You'll pay it?
Oh, yeah, I got it covered. Was there anything else?
Like what?
Anybody come by?
Mark was tempted to say no, just so Bud would be under the impression this guy was still on his way, but he decided against it.
As a matter of fact...
Ow! Oh. All right, I guess I had that coming. He'd tell you to pass that along, did he?
No, that was from me for putting me in a situation like that. That guy could have killed me.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Dalton. Look, I've been seeing this woman for a few weeks now. Even though she's been separated from this guy for about 6 months, he doesn't seem to get the message. Anyway, she said he was coming through Toronto, he'd be looking for me, and I figured you're probably crazier than he is, so you'd know what to say to him. You know, settle him down before he did something stupid.
So Bud had the psychologist part of being a dispatcher down to a science. He was right about the two of them getting along once they got to know each other. It was still a nasty little trick for Bud to pull, and the punch in the mouth was good for the moment, but he'd get him back for this little stunt properly, someday.
Well, you were right on that account. And I hate to admit it, but being a dispatcher is way more difficult than I thought it would be.
Apology accepted. And I suppose the least I can do for putting you in the path of an oncoming mad trucker is to give you your choice of loads.
Mark smiled. He knew exactly which load he wanted first. The one that would take him as far away from the dispatch office as possible.
Chapter 7, Drivers of the Purple Rage.
When Bud gave Mark Dalton his choice of loads, he decided on the one headed for the East Coast. Even though it was one of the biggest ports on the East Coast of North America, Halifax was one of the few parts of the country he'd never been to. Given the choice between a reefer of beef headed for Montreal, a flatbed laden with machine equipment bound for Sudbury that would have to be buttoned down every 100 kilometers, and a van trailer full of plastic pool toys made in China and destined for Halifax, the decision was an easy one to make. The lighter cargo would be easier on motherload, and since it wasn't due into the warehouse in Halifax for 3 days, he could take his time with it. Hopefully, the trip would be an uneventful one, which would be a welcome change after the events of the past few months. On his last trip to the West Coast and back, he'd helped a fellow trucker get untangled from a bunch of smugglers, got caught up in an insurance scam, got ripped off on some routine truck repairs, almost got killed working on a movie set, helped a friend keep his rig, and spent 2 hellish days as a dispatcher. That would have been enough excitement to last a lifetime for most truckers, but Mark seemed to have a talent for finding trouble. Or perhaps trouble had a way of finding its way to him, sort of like an old dog always being able to find its master. Whatever the reason for it, Mark was looking forward to a leisurely drive to the coast, maybe a day on the beach in Lawrencetown trying out a surfboard, and then a load out of the port heading west. The future looked comfortable. Peaceful. Just then, an older model Chrysler New Yorker cut in front of him, trying to squeeze into the lane to get around a Suburban pulling a trailer in the left-hand lane. Mark had to jam on the brakes to avoid hitting the Chrysler, and the light load gave the trailer's tires no real grip on the asphalt. The rear wheels locked up and his rig hardly slowed at all.
Shit, shit, shit.
Mark turned the wheel right to keep his front bumper from being clipped by the speeding car. The right front tire of his Peterbilt caught the shoulder and he started sliding to the right over the gravel and dirt on the side of the highway. The Chrysler straightened out, sped past the Suburban, and turned back into the passing lane, causing the driver of that vehicle to slam on his brakes and veer into the lane in front of Mark. Again, Mark had to turn the wheel sharply to avoid a collision. Behind him, the trailer swung wildly out across the highway, and then mercifully straightened out.
Crazy son of a bitch!
By now, Mark was traveling slowly, and all the other vehicles around him were traveling less than 70. He downshifted a few times to find the right gear, then began the long, slow climb back up the gears to get his rig back up to speed. The Chrysler was about a half a kilometer up the highway, driving slightly slower now since it didn't have to weave and swerve through traffic. As Mark passed the Suburban, he could see the driver wiping his brow with a handkerchief, and the woman in the passenger seat jawing a blue streak as she pointed an accusatory finger at the Chrysler down the road. Mark was angry at the driver, too. After all, he could have killed somebody.
Well, you're not going to get away with that, sonny.
He was up past 110 now, and he could probably get it up to 120 and cruise along at that speed for hours. Even if he didn't catch up to the Chrysler, he might be able to stay behind it, looming large in his mirrors so the driver would know that what he'd done was not only wrong, but downright dangerous. As the speedometer flirted with 120, the blue and white welcome sign for Kingston zoomed past on Mark's right. At this rate, he'd be through Brockville and Cornwall in just a few hours, and would likely reach Halifax much earlier than expected. More importantly, he was getting closer to the bastard in the Chrysler. Another few kilometers and he'd be on him, right up his rear end, giving him a little taste of his own medicine. Outside of Brockville, Mark had managed to pull directly behind the Chrysler. When he got up close to the 10-year-old burgundy sedan, he was able to read the vanity plate below the trunk lid. Big SHT. Mark wondered what was supposed to go between the H and the T. It was either an O or an I. The driver probably thought O, but Mark was convinced it was I. When the front of his Peterbilt was just a few feet from the rear bumper of the Chrysler, Mark let the driver have a blast from his horn. The sound must have startled the driver because the Buick suddenly swerved like a snake slithering down the road.
How do you like that?
The driver of the Chrysler rolled down his window and gave Mark the bird. Mark saw the man's middle finger waving in the air and tightened his grip on the steering wheel until his knuckles turned white. He could feel his face getting hot and red, and his body was a tightly packed ball of rage and in danger of exploding. The driver pulled over as if to let Mark by, but Mark wasn't having any of it. He pulled into the right-hand lane behind the car and kept his foot down hard on the accelerator. The driver was obviously tired of the high-speed chase and moved left to let Mark by.
You're not getting off that easy, asswipe.
Again, Mark pulled behind him, pushing the guy along with his huge rig, forcing him to keep up the pace, even if he had enough of playing cat and mouse. The driver moved into the right-hand lane again, but this time he tried slowing down so that he could get behind Mark and hopefully be done with it. But Mark wouldn't let him. He began inching over to the right, cutting off the lane and leaving the other driver with no place to go. The driver was forced onto the shoulder, just like Mark had been forced to do an hour earlier. Dirt, gravel, and dust rose up in a plume behind the car, and the driver had to struggle to keep the swerving car under control.
Yeah, how's that for you, buddy?
And then the car jammed on its brakes and began skidding to a stop. It was gone from the lane and had fallen far behind Mark's rig. Mark reveled in his victory. He'd shown that guy in the Chrysler a thing or two, and he doubted if he'd go speeding down the 401 again anytime soon. He raised the middle finger of his right hand, knowing full well the driver would never see it.
I'm number one, pal.
Just then, Mark saw a minivan in the lane ahead of him. He was still moving as quickly as his rig could go, and the minivan was cruising along, probably just under the speed limit. Mark took his foot off the accelerator and started downshifting, but it wasn't going to be enough. He jammed on the brakes and struggled to keep the front of his Peterbilt from slamming into the back of the tiny vehicle in front of him. The back tires cried out in pain and torment as they tried to get a grip on the highway, and the trailer began to slide out to the left, sweeping across the passing lane like an arm clearing off a tabletop. There was another car in the lane, a tiny Geo Metro that would probably be destroyed if it came into even the slightest contact with the trailer. And suddenly it was over. The trailer straightened out, the wheels unlocked, and he was rumbling along at 95. There were kids in the back of the minivan. They waved to him. Mark waved back. There was a young girl riding in the Metro. She was talking to the young guy behind the wheel, a boyfriend or fiancé, as if she didn't have a clue about how close she'd just been to being killed. Killed by a maniac road rager named Mark Dalton. How many times had he read about road rage and felt he was too much of a professional to ever become caught up in the heat of the moment? How many times had he shook his head after reading about some bizarre account of some experienced driver losing it out on the highway? How many times had he said he was above all that? Countless times. But in the end, he wasn't immune to it. He'd fallen victim to it, just like all the others, and nearly killed a few innocent people in the process.
Never again. It's not worth it.
He looked in his rearview mirror for the Chrysler, thinking maybe he could apologize to the driver. But the car was little more than a tiny speck in the mirrors now.
Keeping a safe distance, huh? And I don't blame you.
Mark focused on the road ahead, brought his rig up to 105 and switched on the cruise control, suddenly content to let the rest of the world pass him by. Between Brockville and Cornwall, the highway had been fairly quiet. Up ahead, in the lane in front of him, Mark saw an empty lowboy that he seemed to be reeling in at a pretty good clip. He hadn't had to pass anyone for a while, and he wasn't keen on doing it now since he was in no real hurry. But this rig was moving too slowly for him to follow for any length of time. Mark checked his mirrors, saw there wasn't anyone racing up the left lane, and pulled out to pass. He was creeping past the lowboy slowly, almost making him wonder why he was even bothering to pass the guy. But it soon became obvious that the guy had sped up while Mark was trying to pass him. Mark knew plenty of drivers who hated being passed by other truckers, especially when they were pulling a light load and some big tanker roared on because of some big horsepower advantage. Maybe this guy was like that, although it wasn't likely since Mark wasn't hauling anything but puffed up plastic and foam and the guy's trailer was empty. After about 20 seconds, Mark was still trying to get by, inching up the lowboy as if his fingers were walking along the trailer to mark his progress. He pressed the accelerator down hesitantly, not wanting to get caught up in another situation like the one he had earlier in the day. At last, he was even with the other trucker's cab. He looked over at the man and waved hello. The other driver had only been periodically glancing to his left, but when Mark gave him a wave, he immediately put his eyes on the road in front of him and kept them there.
And a good day to you too, buddy.
Finally, he was past the lowboy and was just waiting for his trailer to clear it so he could move back into the right-hand lane when he noticed a road crew working in the passing lane up ahead. One of their trucks was halfway out into the lane, and a few orange cones were lined up on the shoulder. Mark checked his mirror and saw the other driver was still trying to match his speed, as if he wanted Mark to work damn hard to pass him. Well, Mark was working. In fact, he was sweating now. He had two choices. He could either hit the road crew's truck, or he could cut off the lowboy and hope the two trucks didn't touch. He decided on the latter, since it was the only one in which it might be possible for everyone to get through it without a scratch. He floored the accelerator and waited for the last possible moment, then pulled right. He missed the rear end of the road crew's truck, which had now pulled completely onto the shoulder, and he managed to get far enough in front of the lowboy so that at worst, the other driver would have to slam on his brakes.
Sorry.
Mark looked into his mirrors. The lowboy was sending up a cloud of black smoke, and the trailer seemed to be shuddering on the asphalt. The rig began to grow smaller in his mirrors as the driver pulled over onto the side of the highway.
This is Motherlode to the fella in the lowboy. Do you copy? Maybe we'll meet up somewhere down the road.
The lowboy had become a tiny speck in his mirrors now, but he could still make out the plume of smoke rising up from its stack as the rig got up some speed and prepared to rejoin traffic. But as the minutes passed, it became apparent that the lowboy wasn't just getting back into the highway's flow. He was making some serious steam trying to catch back up to Mark. With each kilometer that passed, the white early model Volvo with a rhubarb across the front of its grille grew larger and larger in his mirrors. He guessed it was around 10 years old, probably with more than a few million kilometers on it. It was obvious the rig wasn't going to win any races, but Mark wasn't in the mood for driving like a maniac. After all, he'd been there and done that just that morning, and that had been enough excitement, even for Mark. But the lowboy just kept on coming. Mark saw a sign for a rest station coming up in another 2 kilometers and figured it was about time for a break. Sitting down with a meal and a newspaper might do him some good, and it might also give the guy in the lowboy a chance to cool off. He pulled right onto the off-ramp and slowed his rig. He brought it around back and parked it so that he would be able to see it from several of the picnic tables set up outside the rest station. As he walked toward the main building, Mark noticed that the lowboy had also pulled in and had parked in one of the few open spots at the opposite end of the lot from Motherlode. He watched the rig for a long time, waiting for the man to get out and approach him, but he never did.
Well, at least he's not looking for a confrontation.
He used the restroom, ordered a burger, fries, and coffee, and then bought a copy of the National Post to read while he ate. He was halfway through the sports section by the time he finished eating and carried his coffee with him back to his rig. As far as he could tell, the lowboy driver hadn't come into the rest station and maybe hadn't even left his rig. Perhaps he was tired and needed to catch a few winks. Hopefully, that would explain his erratic driving. Sure, the guy had spent most of the day driving to deliver whatever equipment he was carrying, and now that he was returning home, he was beat, just trying to put a few more kilometers under the wheels before taking a break. That was probably it. Had to be. It sure beat thinking that he'd tried to get Mark killed after Mark had cut him off through no fault of his own. Mark paused a moment in the parking lot. Maybe he should go over and knock on the guy's cab and explain what happened. He could tell him he was sorry and that he hadn't meant to send him off the road. Then again, the guy might be sleeping by now, dreaming of someone like Shannon Tweed, and Mark waking him wasn't going to make matters any better. Might even piss him off. But if Mark left now, the guy would be sleeping for another few hours, and by the time he woke up, Mark would be halfway to Halifax. That made the most sense. They were both professionals, after all. Best to just let it go. Water under the bridge, or more appropriately, asphalt under the tires. And they could both get on with the job of delivering goods and making themselves a living, while making sure stuff like that didn't happen again. Satisfied with his decision, Mark took a sip of his coffee and headed for his rig. In moments, he was underway. As he cleared his trailer of the other rigs parked in the lot, he noticed movement in his mirror. Apparently, Lowboy was on the move, too. By the time Mark neared the Ontario-Quebec border, it was obvious that the driver of the Lowboy was following him. He had matched Mark's pace every kilometer of the way, even passing other vehicles when it was unsafe to do so just to stay behind him. Mark wondered if he should radio for help, or perhaps try to reach the Ontario Provincial Police to report. Report what? That some driver was following him on the highway, driving just as fast as he was, no more or no less? There was no law against following another trucker. Hell, Mark did it himself often enough when he was tired and the guy in front of him was doing a decent enough pace. But this guy wasn't just following him, he was keeping Mark close to him, like he hadn't forgotten about being cut off by Mark back near Brockville.
Man, he must really be pissed off.
Mark upped his speed to 110, hoping to catch the other driver by surprise and see him fade into the distance. No chance. The guy was accelerating as well, keeping between 1 and 2 truck lengths behind him. It was a crazy situation, sort of like that famous TV movie Duel that starred Dennis Weaver as some sad sack salesman being pursued across the California desert by a crazed trucker driving a big tank trailer, presumably filled with oil. But that was a movie. This, on the other hand, was the real thing, and in real life, people could get hurt. Maybe Mark, maybe the other driver, but just maybe some 2-year-old whose parents were driving to Montreal to visit Nana and Opa. Mark shook his head at the thought. He couldn't keep driving all day without a break. Neither of them could. But it didn't look as if the other driver was going to back down any, so it was up to Mark to do something. He decided the best thing would be to get away from the guy before he had the chance to do something crazy. Mark pressed his foot down hard on the accelerator. He heard the Cummins lag behind for a moment, then thrum at a higher pitch. Soon, the entire rig was gaining speed and the speedometer slowly began to acknowledge he was accelerating. 115, 116, 118. Mark checked his mirrors and saw that the rhubarb on the front of the Volvo tractor wasn't getting any smaller, but actually loomed even larger in his mirrors, like the crazy fool was actually gaining on him. Mark kept accelerating, pulling out into the passing lane to glide by a pickup truck fully loaded with furniture and appliances. 120 now. The lowboy was getting even closer, as if the guy was willing to burn out his motor just to give Mark a scare.
Well, I am scared. Scared that somebody's gonna get killed and the event will end up on one of those road rage websites for all my fellow truckers to see.
When he was down to just over 100, he brought his foot down again and began feeding fuel into the engine. Then he pulled over into the passing lane, giving the lowboy behind him plenty of opportunity to get by. But the lowboy slowed as well, staying in the right-hand lane as if he were minding his manners and had no business getting out in front of Mark. Cars were beginning to back up in both lanes behind them. Surely a cop would soon be onto them, and then Mark would be the one at fault. Mark pulled back into the right lane and brought Motherlode back up to a comfortable speed.
Damn it!
Even though the guy hadn't done a damn thing to him, his mere presence was incredibly annoying, and if nothing else, it was diverting Mark's attention away from the road. This had to be the opposite of road rage, Mark thought. Road unrage, he should call it, where a driver is driving erratically to avoid a nasty confrontation, but without any luck. He had a long way to go before he got to Halifax, and if this guy hounded him the entire way, he'd be a nervous wreck by the time it came for him to deliver his load and interact with a shipper.
All right, I've had enough.
He decided it was time he reported this guy to the police. Regardless of what his intentions were, the lowboy driver had put people's lives at risk by trying to stay behind Mark at all costs. Even if the police didn't do anything, at least the guy would know Mark wasn't about to let him get away with trying to scare him half to death.
This is a 911, Ontario Provincial Police. Do you copy?
No answer. In fact, judging by the lack of static coming from the box, Mark couldn't even be sure his radio was working.
Can I have a radio check, please?
Son of a bitch!
He realized the guy had probably disabled his radio at the last rest station. This was getting serious, and Mark was getting nervous. He could pull over and stop, but that would just give the guy the chance to pick a fight with him in the middle of nowhere. Besides, it was recommended that you drive to a police station or a public place, or, if at night, someplace where there was plenty of light. Well, it was the middle of the day and there wasn't a police station in sight. Up ahead, there was a sign for another rest station. Excellent. Mark would pull in, park his rig, and try to talk some sense to the guy. He'd apologize, buy the guy lunch, anything, just so that it could be over and they could both be on their way. And not only that, but a bathroom break after all the excitement on the road wouldn't be a bad idea either. A second sign appeared at the side of the highway, and Mark knew that one way or another, this whole thing would be over in just a few minutes. Mark slowed and signaled to exit the highway. He checked his mirrors and saw that the lowboy wasn't signaling at all. He wasn't even slowing down. Mark watched closely as the lowboy continued on past the rest station and on down the highway. He was gone.
Thank God that's over with.
Mark made use of the facilities inside the rest station and then wondered if he should pick up a coffee and something to go. A coffee would be great, and there was a Tim Hortons in the rest station, which was his favorite. But there was something about coffee and long hauls that just didn't mix. If he had another coffee now, he'd be stopping at every rest stop between here and Halifax. No thanks. But even though he didn't want a coffee, he wasn't keen on heading back onto the highway just yet either. He wanted to give the lowboy as much time alone on the highway as he could. With any luck, someone else might cut him off or wave hello or just get on the guy's nerves. Admittedly, it wasn't much of a plan, but Mark wasn't sure there was a solution to this particular problem. Lowboy was obviously crazy. Either that or road raged. Mark decided on an apple fritter that would keep his stomach happy until dinner time, and he ate it in silence while he watched the traffic zoom by along the highway outside the window. The trucks passed by at random, and it was a lot like a lottery, really. Any one of those drivers could snap at any moment, and when it happened, years of experience, professionalism, and just plain common sense would all get tossed out the window. It was a lottery, all right, but one in which there was no winners and way too many losers. He finished his fritter and headed back out to his rig. Before he got underway, Mark checked his radio and antenna, hoping he might be able to repair them. No such luck. Not only had Lowboy cut several of his wires, he had cut entire sections out of the wires, leaving Mark with a bunch of naked ends that were too short to be reconnected. Mark could feel the anger gathering within him, a hot pot about to boil, and did his best to remain calm. Sure, he was pissed off, but it wasn't going to do him any good to charge out of the rest station looking for blood. He could get the radio fixed easily enough, and if he needed to, he could always dial 911 on his cell phone. Reluctantly, Mark climbed into Mother Lode, started her up, and headed back onto the highway. About 5 kilometers out of the rest station, Mark saw a rig up ahead parked on the shoulder.
Oh, come on.
As he neared, it became obvious that the rig pulled over onto the side of the highway was none other than the lowboy being pulled by the Rhubarb Volvo.
Doesn't this guy ever give up?
He tried to take a quick look into the cab as he went by, but the light was wrong and he couldn't make out anyone in either of the front seats. For a moment, he thought that maybe the guy was taking a nap, but he'd wrongly assumed that once already, and he knew in his heart that all the guy had been doing there was waiting for Mark to pass. And sure enough, before Mark was even 100 meters down the highway, the Volvo's twin stacks belched a cloud of smoke and the lowboy was signaling a return to the highway. Mark wasn't sure how long he could go on like this. Up ahead on the right-hand side of the highway, a pair of yellow lights were flashing atop a large rectangular sign, beckoning drivers to pull over and drive through the weigh scales.
Yes.
Mark usually didn't have much affection for the inspectors who manned the coupes, but right now they seemed heaven sent. However, as much as Mark wanted to be stopped for an inspection, his cargo was very light, and he was well below his gross vehicle weight limit of 80,000 pounds. And even though Mother Lode was a 6-year-old Peterbilt 379, he always kept her in top condition, so there would be no obvious reason for the inspectors to pull him over.
Just my luck.
He'd be through the station in seconds, and then he and Lowboy would be back on the highway just a kilometer down the road from where they left off. Mark had to think of something, and quick. And then he was struck with an idea. He reached over and got out his logbook, then took out a large black magic marker from the visor above him and quickly scribbled a message onto the back cover of the book. Then, as he slowed down to drive over the scales, he reached over and pressed the logbook up against the passenger window. Hopefully, he was moving slowly enough, and at least one of the inspectors was attentive enough to read the message. Mark watched closely as an inspector sipping a cup of coffee squinted in Mark's direction as he drove by. At first, the man expressed surprise. Then, he quickly put down his coffee and nodded at Mark. Mark slid back into the driver's seat and began shifting up through the gears, preparing for his return to highway traffic. At the same time, he kept an eye in his mirrors, watching all of the inspectors scramble out of the coupe and flag down Lowboy before he had a chance to drive through the scales. Lowboy came to a stop, probably wondering what the hell was going on. And then, before fixing his eyes on the road in front of him, Mark glanced over at the logbook that was now on the passenger seat and read the message he'd hurriedly scribbled onto the book's back cover. Lowboy behind, wielding gun. His penmanship was a bit sloppy, and he'd almost made the letters too big to fit onto the back of the book, but judging by the result, the 4 words had done their job. Maybe he had a gun, maybe he didn't. Either way, by the time the inspectors had it all figured out, Mark would be hundreds of kilometers away and driving in peace.